our meeting in order. Stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jessica, roll call.
Lassiter.
Here.
Nemechek.
Here.
Conklin.
Here.
Moody.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay. No one's here for public comment of any sort, so Joe, I think we're going to turn it over to you.
Okay, sounds good.
Bill or she, something you want to
No, that's fine. Yep.
So feel free to ask questions anytime as we go through this. Same as with, as was in the case with previous years, it was a very smooth audit process. Boeing doesn't just simply do the standard financial statement audit report. You guys submit to the Government Finance Officers Association, which means in addition to the standard financial statement audit, Mike and Jessica put together an introductory section of the report, which does a nice job of giving a narrative of what's been accomplished by the city. Sometimes some of those accomplishments don't necessarily get reflected in the financial statements. So it's an opportunity for the city to kind of show its readers some of the more significant accomplishments during the past year and talk about what's coming down the pipeline. And the city does a wonderful job of putting that together. It's well written. It really gives readers just a good idea of what the city has accomplished. It takes a significant amount of time to put that together. In the state of Michigan, there are 50 cities that put together the GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association packet, which again includes both the introductory and the statistical section, out of 275 cities. So less than 19% of the cities in the state of Michigan go that extra mile to put together this full annual comprehensive financial report. And in addition to the introductory section, the statistical section is included as well. There's about 20 pages of 10-year comparative information showing demographics, key employers, tax base, all those different types of ratios. It shows the city's net position over the past 10 years, your fund balances over the past 10 years. Just gives a really nice synopsis of how the city's finances are progressing over time. And you guys submit it to the GFOA. The GFOA reviews it. They give a grade. And if you pass, you get the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. You can see that on page 8. And this was the 6th consecutive year, or April 30, 2021. The GFOA is always 1 year behind. So you can see the award for the previous audit included in this year's audit report. And the city did submit the April 30, 2022 audit report to the GFOA. And at some point, that should be showing up fairly soon, I would think. You'll be getting your award for this current audit as well. But basically, it's kudos to the city and the staff for everybody that helped put this together. Again, about 18-19% of the cities in the state of Michigan get this award. And it means that you guys went above and beyond, probably put in an extra 40 hours of work, I would guess. And it increases the amount of transparency you're providing to your readers. So I think it's important to give recognition to this and not just gloss over it. It really does mean something. It's a commitment to transparency to your readers and citizens of the city. So like I mentioned, this is the 6th year of you guys have submitted 2022, so that'll be your 7th consecutive year of getting that. Page 12, we get to the independent auditor's report, and in the 140 page or so report, this page matters more than anything else. So we get the financial statements from Jessica and the city. We go through and we verify the revenues, the expenditures, the assets, the liabilities. We confer with various financial institutions the numbers that were provided to us. And assuming everything checks out, we provide a clean opinion on your financial statements. And the second paragraph down does just that. We write, in our opinion, the financial statements present fairly, in all material respects, the financial position of the city as of April 30, 2022. A clean opinion, this is the gold standard. We can't provide a higher level of an opinion on your financial statements than just this. Basically, it means that your numbers are verifiable, they're accurate, they're timely. It should always be the city's goal to have a clean opinion on your financial statements, but it certainly means something to achieve it. And again, so just a further demonstration of the quality of the work that the city puts forth each year. Maybe one other thing worth pointing out here, if you compare this year's audit to last year's audit, you'll see some geography changes on this independent auditor's report. The biggest change is the opinion is now the second paragraph, whereas if you looked at previous year audit reports, it would be towards the very end of the independent auditor's report section. The reason being the AICPA wanted to bring this more to the forefront, the opinion, instead of burying it at the very tail end of a letter that they put in the second paragraph down. So a slight change, but really just geography change. The content is the same.
Sticking to that page, who does the housing commission audit? Like,
so that was my question. That was one question I had.
I think it's last year we met. And it's a Polish name, if I remember. Smithing, Klasowitz. I think they're on the east side of the state, if I remember correctly. They do a large number of housing commissions. That's one of their specialties. There aren't a whole lot of audit firms that do housing commission audits. It tends to be a specialized area. There's agreed upon procedures. There's a lot of unique attributes of a housing commission audit, so it tends to be specialized, an area that firms will specialize in.
So most municipal governments break that up, audit process up into different parties?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If they have a housing commission. Yep. And just the way that the standards are written, we need to include the Housing Commission as a discreetly presented component unit of the city, even though it has a very limited control of their assets. So they do go into their own separate column. They're not included in the city's basic financial statements. They go at the very far right column and get grouped with the DDA and the LDFA financial statements over there. So
if they have a shipwreck, are we responsible for anything?
Mm-hmm. They stand on their own, but because the city has at least a level of control in terms of who gets appointed to the board, for that reason they're considered a discreetly presenting component unit. So if there's any type of an appointment that happens at the city level to those boards, same as with the DDA or the LDFA, they get pulled into that discreetly presented component unit column of the city's financial statements. So they're outside of your financial statements, but they're still there, so the readers have some visibility of what's going on. But technically, yeah, if they went bankrupt, it doesn't mean that necessarily the creditors are going to come after the city.
Can they come after the city?
I was just going to say,
it's all about
you didn't say it was good.
I've never heard that happening, so.
We don't make appointments to the Housing Commission either. They're completely independent.
I think the way that the statute is written, the control does rest with the city council to make those appointments. Whether or not that's what happens for all practical purposes, I can't remember what statute they were formed under off the top of my head. But according to the state statutes, the city does have the ability to at least influence who gets appointed to that board.
I think it's Public Act 18 of 1933, and our ordinance designates that the city manager appoints them.
Yeah.
And that's authorized under state law. So that was something I found really unique when I first came here.
Public Act 18
of 1933. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
What if there's no real benefit to the city, then why do we even associate ourselves for any of this?
It'd be similar to like the DDA, right?
It's created under a state statute. The city created the Housing Commission, much as it did the DDA and the LDFA. So that's just the way the state law has it written. And we have the appointing responsibility, and the city commissioner, the state law designated it to the city manager, probably when it was initially created.
When was the When was that portion of the charter? Was that in the original charter?
It's not in the charter. It's in the code of ordinances. I'd have to take a look back to see if that specifies what year it was created.
I get the question commonly from my clients. Another one that is frustrating for my clients is the counties. Every county has a road commission, and the road commission gets pulled into the county's audit report, and it makes no sense because it's a significant amount of assets, but it has nothing to do with the county.
Right.
Because the county has a level of control over the governing body, it gets pulled into their audit report too. We're just the messenger here. The governmental county standards board tells us, hey, if there's any level of control in selecting the governing body of these other units of government, we pull them in as discreetly presenting component units. And I agree with you, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that is the way this stands.
Well, that was a good analogy, because I definitely know how the road commission, that county works with.
So if we go down to page 17, we get into the management discussion analysis section of the report. If I were trying to gain an understanding of how the city did financially, this is where I would go, to the management discussion analysis. It's about 10 pages of condensed information. You see financial highlights. You can see two-year comparative information to get an idea for some of the trends that the city is showing. And you get some narrative explaining reasons behind those significant changes in revenues and expenses and assets and liabilities for the past 2 years. So just a really good source of information. It's 10 pages versus 140 pages. It's a really good spot to go to for a quick snapshot of how the city did. So those financial highlights, that first bullet point shows if you take all the assets, this is on the accrual basis of accounting, so we're looking at all the long-term assets, all the long-term liabilities, and the difference is referred to as net position. So the total net position is $34,885,085. That means this is the same basis of accounting your corporation would use if the city sold all of its assets, your streets, your buildings, vehicles, equipment, and paid all of your liabilities, there'd be about $35 million left over. Well, of course, the city has no intent of doing that. So it's a theoretical number. If you continue on through that first bullet point, we see the unrestricted net position of the city is about $7,871,000. That's a more liquid representation of what your net position was at April 30, 2022, and that backs off the long-term fixed assets. Obviously you can't spend a fixed asset. It backs off the restricted fund balances in your water fund, your sewer fund, and your major local street funds. Any of your designated special revenue funds are backed off as restricted fund balances or restricted net position as well. So the 7.9 million represents how much, is a better representation of where your true liquidity was at April 30, 2022 versus the 35 million. Second bullet point down, if we look at your accrual-based revenues, they were about $10.8 million during the year. Expenses were about $9.3 million, and that led to an increase in net position of $1.56 million during fiscal 22. So if a reader is looking at these financial statements and they ask the question, is the city better off financially at April 30, 2022 compared to 2021, the answer is yes, by $1,555,955. So I would think this is being net income in the corporate world. And same basis of accounting, so we're depreciating your fixed assets, we're recording the change in your net pension liability and your net OPEB liability, things of that nature. Third bullet point now we're looking at what are your fund balances? What is the cash basis of accounting? This is, now we're getting to, it's called modified accrual, but I would think of this as being checkbook accounting. So when you look at your financial statements during the course of the year, this is what you're seeing. Your fund balances had total fund balances of $4,937,112. That was an increase of just over $1 million during the year. Fourth bullet point now shows that city's general fund increased by $1,089,581. So total fund balances increased by about $1,050,000, but your general fund increased by $1,090,000. So your most important fund, in fact, had basically all of the increase in your total fund balance for the year, which is good. So the ending fund balance in your general fund came at $3,142,171. And then the last bullet point shows the unassigned fund balance in your general fund. So in your general fund, being your most important fund, the most important element of fund balance is your unassigned fund balance. That's how much the city has to pay your utilities, your wages, supplies, things of that nature. Came in at $3,056,554. If we divide that by your general fund annual expenditures and transfers out, you're 71.6% funded. It's not quite 9 months, but close to 9 months worth of reserves sitting in your unassigned fund balance at the end of the year. Very healthy. Most of our cities are right in that range, somewhere between 50 and 100%. Not too much, not too little, just a very healthy unassigned fund balance at year end.
The difference between the third bullet point, 62% compared to the 72%.
Okay, sure. So the third bullet point, we're looking at your the city's total fund balance of $4.9 million. Now some of that $4.9 million is restricted for ambulance, marina, major local streets. The $3,056,000 is the unassigned fund balance. So we're just taking the $3,056,000, dividing it by the $4.937 million. So we're saying 61.9% of your total fund balance is unassigned. And then the last bullet point is saying your unassigned fund balance is 71.6% of your expenditures and transfers out. So we're showing how much within your general fund, how much reserve do you have just within your general fund alone at April 30, 2022.
So about 8 months?
Yeah, a little bit more than eight, a little bit less than nine, somewhere in that range.
And the standard's nine?
Well, the standard ranges. The Government Finance Officers Association recommends at least 2 months. So that's a starting point. I don't know that I would recommend that, but every local unit is different in terms of what they want that number to be, because you've got seasonality of your cash flows. You want to make sure you've got reserves available. If there's a couple years ago, the city had that grant for the green space that was a significant investment of fund balance. It's nice to have reserves available to be able to cover that. Or if there's unexpected one-time expenditures, it's nice to have the buffer in your general fund to cover those one-time large expenditures that might pop up.
A couple of years ago, as an example, when we had the high lake levels, and we were going to have to put in huge investments. We did 1 year's worth where we started a test program here and then another one out at Tannery Beach Park that we've learned from. But we were thinking we're going to have to be doing that all along the lakeshore a couple of years, so we weren't sure where we were going to end up on that. But that we had the resources to at least get that started at that time.
I suppose like Gator is probably a good example of, I mean, that.
The tornado?
Yeah, all the damage and work they got to do to get that back up.
Yeah, because that really, that shut that down. And obviously, I think they got some support from the state and the federal governments to help them. But again, that doesn't help them immediately, and I'm not sure how much of that goes to the municipality to reimbursement.
Oh.
Knock on wood, you know, we won't have to find that out for a while.
So say if we had a tornado here and we needed to dip into the fund balance to replace, you know, a lot of infrastructure. And if the state of the feds came back, would they reimburse us? Would they go back into the fund balance?
Yes.
Reimburse
if they
us?
Re- they? Yes.
It's able to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And we have a commission policy of a minimum fund equity, do we not?
Yes. I believe it's 25%. And we were close to that a couple of years ago. I want to say about 2 or 3, it seemed like.
Okay.
Joe, could you figure out why there was an increase?
I had to go look at prior year audit reports to see. Most likely it had to do with capital expenditures that typically, it's fairly predictable what your general government expenditures are going to be in your public safety. There's not much that changes. I mean, certainly they do change on an annual basis, but not dramatically year over year. What does change are your transfers out of the general fund to subsidize the operations of other funds. For example, the could be the marina fund or the ambulance fund. Other years it might be, maybe there's a large capital project. I know there was the land that was purchased a couple years ago, it seemed like that was $1 million, if I remember correctly. That obviously had an impact on your general fund balance. So it just depends on what those large one-time expenditures are. If you go an entire year that doesn't have those large one-time expenditures, you're going to have a larger increase in your fund balance versus a year where you have one or two big ticket purchases. That's really it. There wasn't necessarily any new revenues that led to a significant increase in your general fund balance. It's really just kind of fewer expenditures, one-time expenditures. But I'd have to go look at previous reports to verify that.
Was the Lincoln Street project will be in next year's audit?
I'm trying to think when most of those expenditures took place. Yes, it would be after May 1st of last year. Yeah, it all took place this summer. And I don't know if the ARPA funds are reflected in here as part of that?
Not yet.
Okay. I thought there was a note in here that reflected about $251,000,
yes,
something like that.
So it's sitting in unearned revenue, and the way that the revenue recognition standards are written, the city reports it as revenue after you make the expenditures. So you collected the funds, and you were sitting on them at April 30, 2022, but the underlying expenditures had not been incurred.
Correct.
So you will recognize the revenue after those expenditures happen.
Okay.
So the funds were there. The internet revenue increased, but that revenue hasn't changed yet. If you want to make a note, I will eventually get to it, but page 97. Might be page 96. 96, 97. That gives a 10-year comparative for all the expenditures and revenues for the general fund.
Yeah, I think it's 96.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So 96 marks it. So you can kind of see some of the more significant changes. Actually, this is across all funds.
What year did we dip into it to build the DPW building? If you remember that?
Ooh, we've been in this building 6 years now, yeah. And that would have been about 2 years before that, so about 8 years ago.
I thought there was a schedule that showed just the general fund. I guess not. These schedules blend all the governmental funds together, so you can't necessarily see just the general fund. Any other questions before we go to the next page? Go down to page 20. The schedule shows comparative assets and liabilities for the past 3 years of the city. And very top row, it's always nice to see how your cash and investments are doing. 2021, the very last column, very top row, $8.84 million of cash and investments compared to $10.8 million at April 30, 2022. So a healthy increase, just about $2 million on your cash in investments. The biggest reason being the change in overall net position. So as your revenues exceed your expenses, you expect to see your cash go up as well. If you look about two-thirds of the way down this schedule, you'll see the unearned revenue. That number increased. It was $271,997 at April 30, 2021. It was primarily marina funds that make that up. What happens is that the marina season starts on May 1st. The city's fiscal year end is April 30, so a lot of those rentals are paid, or leases are paid in advance. So what you're collecting in, you know, February, March, and April really isn't revenue until May and thereafter. So we pick that up as unearned revenue. And then that number goes from $272,000 up to $522,000 in 2022. As Mike mentioned, the biggest reason for that change were the ARPA funds that the city received but had not expended at April 30, 2022. And it's always nice to see how your net OPEB liability is doing. You guys we're in the forefront of getting in front of that to make sure that liability doesn't get out of control. You can see it is trending down. So about 3/4 of the way down, your net OPEB liability in the net current liability section decreased from $119,000 to $86,500. And 3 more rows down from there, your total net pension liability decreased from $1,106,533 to $673,104. So that is very much trending in a positive direction. We're probably going to see that number flip in row and on the April 30, 2020 impact wheel will certainly will, just because the market was down in 2022. So MERS has a calendar year end. They're going to look at your pension asset performance for the 12 months ended December 31st, 2022. It's going to be negative. I haven't seen the results yet, but your total net pension liability is going to increase, but every local unit participates with MERS is going to see the same thing, unfortunately. But still, it's nice to see that coming down. If you look 3 rows further down, the pension-related deferred inflows, you will get some relief here. $264,740 in April 30, 2021. That number increased up to $654,605 in April 30, 2022. Because the city earned 14% rate of return on your pension assets during calendar year 2021, we took the excess earnings. You're only supposed to earn, we estimate, about 7.5%. Because you actually earned 14%, we take the difference and we put it into this pension-related deferred inflows, and we spread it over 4 more years. So there's $654,000 of suspended excess earnings that we're going to apply towards your investment losses that happened on your 2023 report. So while we're going to see your total net pension liability increase, we aren't going to see it all impact your net position. We really, the way that the governmental accounting standards board set up those pension standards, they wanted to kind of reduce market volatility, the impact that market volatility has on your financial condition. So that's really just kind of there to kind of smooth your earnings over a period of time. So you'll see the benefit, that $654,000 number is going to decrease at the same rate that your net pension liability number increases, so they should wash and pretty much balance each other out to some extent. So it won't all impact your net position, I guess is the good news.
Where is the $1 million that we keep carrying forward on the marina? Is that in here?
The marina budget?
Yeah,
he'll get to that section, I believe.
So if you go down to page 22.
So Joe, do you recommend we just keep the pedal to the metal on trying to reduce the pension liability? We're at 91%, I think you said, and
yes,
a lot of other municipalities are much lower than that.
You guys are about 20 points ahead of our average clients. When we look at all of our clients who participate with MERS, they're at 73% funded. The city is at 93% funded. So you're doing much better than average. You're very close to being fully funded. At which point you will see a dramatic change, a decrease in the amount of burden that your general fund is absorbing right now. Your normal cost, which is the cost of providing benefits to your active employees that remain on the plan, is about $60,000 per year, $50,000 to $60,000 per year. So once you get fully funded, your annual expenditure for pension to MERS is going to be about $60,000 per year, and that number is going to keep trending down until you have no more active participants, assuming that the investments perform the way that we expect them to. In one of the schedules that I'll get to, we'll show how much the city has actually been paying into the MERS plan, which is about $400,000 to $450,000 per year, and that number keeps, it has 7 years of comparative. You can see it, the number just keeps going up. So you're going to have that number keep going up, and all of a sudden, once you get to 100% funded, it goes down to $60,000 per year. You have like $400,000 per year savings on pension expense once that happens. So it definitely benefits the city to get to 100% funding, because MERS will take a lot of pressure off of you to keep on funding it at that same accelerated level. They're trying to get all these local units to get to 100% funding, and once you do that, it significantly decreases the burden on your general fund. So it is advantageous to do so. But I would make sure you hear it from Merce first and make sure, like, if the city wants to make some type of voluntary payment or anything along those lines to get to 100% funded, I would definitely run it past them and make sure you understand the true impact of doing so directly from Merce.
Aren't we like 2 years out from that point?
Pretty close. Now, who knows what it's going to look like based on the 2022 valuation. If 2022 would have yielded good results, then yes, you would have been very close to being there.
But didn't you say we can move that $660,000 thing
so
to compensate for that loss?
It smooths the impact on your expenses. So when we look at your financial statements, it's going to reduce your pension expense. So you're going to, the increase in the net pension liability is going to increase pension expense, but then we get to offset the pension expense by decreasing your deferred inflows related to pension. So it helps your financial statements, but it doesn't help your funding percentage. It's just kind of a purgatory, is what one of my clients calls it, purgatory for numbers. They just put it there to help defray the additional expense that you need to recognize in the event of an off-market year. But it does not help your funding percentage. It has no impact from the actuarial standpoint on your funding percentage. So MERS doesn't even know what that deferred inflows number is. It has nothing. They're looking just cash basis. How much cash do you have? What is your total long-term liability? And they don't pay any attention to that other stuff that we do as auditors.
You know, with your other clients, we've had an issue where with the defined pension, that's being, since we don't have it now and other units of government do, mm-hmm. that it's creating, you know, a hiring difficulty
sure.
for us where we get compared to. How do you deal with that? Or have you had anything with your other?
Well, I would just be grateful you're not on that board because that's going to be hard to fund. I mean, most prudent boards have discontinued the defined benefit pension plan just because it's so expensive. I mean, look at how much the city's paying right now versus how much you're going to pay once you're fully funded. And I think I know which local unit you're referring to. They're going to have to struggle for decades to come to continue to fund the defined benefit pension portion of their budget. It's a significant cost to them. So I suppose if it's worth them to have that as a recruiting tool, then I'm sure it's nice, but the money has to come from somewhere to fund that. So yeah, maybe they use it as a recruiting tool, but they're making cuts somewhere else so they can actually provide that benefit to those employees. So it comes at a cost to be able to do that for sure.
Have they done actuarial on it yet?
No, Kevin's still working with them on that.
For
the police? Oh. No, we're talking about our police department. Oh. I think that was your question.
Right, yeah. The last I knew, they were working on actuarial for that.
When that'll be done? What's that?
Do we know when that'll be done?
Once they get the whole process set up, they say it takes about 30 days for them to run that number.
Oh.
And any other questions? So page 22, we get a look at the comparative revenues and expenses for the past 2 years. And about one third of the way down, you can see total revenues are fairly consistent, $10.4 million. If you go to the very last column, 2021, $10.4 million compared to $10.8 million in 2022. And then if you go four rows up from the bottom, the total expenses, $8.7 million in 2021 compared to about $9.3 million in 2022. A very consistent increase in your total net position, $1.66 million in 2021 and $1.56 million in 2022. So back-to-back years of increasing net position. In fact, one of the things that I'll quickly show once we get to this statistical section, if you look at the past 10 years, the city has 10 consecutive years of increasing that position. So this is something that you guys have really done a very good job of maintaining and increasing your net position consistently over time. Any questions on revenues and expenses?
Nope.
maybe just a couple items to note here. Two rolls down, the operating grants and contributions, state aid was up. That's really the primary reason for that increase in your operating grants and contributions. And if you look at your property taxes, you can see a healthy increase from about $3.68 million up to about $3.77 million. So just signs of increasing taxable values and just more revenues being available MDOT and the state of Michigan to distribute to local units for Act 51 revenues as well as state aid. And I won't jump into this, but if you go to page 26, I just think that this is very well written, kind of like the introductory letter, the economic condition and outlook. This too is something that the city puts a lot of time into, and it's another area where Mike and the city really go above and beyond. And I think I know that of all of our clients, and I just hit the number today, it's about 270 audits that we do across the state of Michigan. There aren't any economic condition and outlook paragraphs written better than this one. This really is very informative. A lot of time goes into it. I think it's worth reading. I think it's a great snapshot of how the city performed and what's going on. I think it's useful information for readers to know about their community. If you go down to page 30,
could I just offer a different opinion? Because I read this in, you know, I look at this audit as being something that's coming from you.
Sure.
And there's nothing that indicates that this is not from you, that it's coming from the city staff and that sort of stuff. So to me, it kind of makes it a little fuzzy about
your
integrity of this. When, you know, this is, it isn't you, this is our city staff providing this information.
Sure. So the way that an audit is intended to work, we, as your auditor, show up, and the only thing that we are technically supposed to provide is that 3 or 4 page independent auditor's report. That technically is the only part of the audit that's ours. It's our opinion, and it's our seal of approval on the financial statements that the city's providing to us. So most of the time we play a role, and obviously, you know, we get a BSA backup, and we use that backup to create, you know, the vast majority of this report. We put together some of the comparative schedules. There is a lot of collaboration back and forth between us and the city, just because the more we collaborate, the better the end result is going to be. But there, technically, the only part of this audit that's ours is that 4-page independent auditor's report. Everything else is the city's, and then we are providing an opinion on that. And I don't know how deep you want me to get into the standards, but we do, we consider that to be a non-audit service. When we, like, if you look at this report, this isn't something necessarily, you know, these schedules aren't something that the city's putting together. We are putting these together. So it's referred to as a non-audit service. And we need to make sure that we maintain independence with our clients when we put these schedules together for them. So we start with the BSNA backup, and then the end result is this. And we have all kinds of documentation in our files that we are required to go through and document, you know, who at the city is going to review the report that we sent to them and acknowledge that it's correct. So we always send it to Jessica and Mike, and they go through and review it, make sure, yep, you know, we agree with these financial statements. They are what we provided to you. So we collaborate, we work together, and ultimately we make sure that any non-audit service that we provide to the city that you guys are reviewing, accepting, and approving it, so that you guys assume responsibility for it. And if you guys don't assume responsibility for it, then we do have, like, we can't audit our own work. We would have a conflict of interest and independence issue if we do that. So that's certainly a very good observation, because if you look at this, it looks like a report that we did, but we can't provide an opinion on our own work. So we're really collaborating with the city to put this together. We carefully document in our work papers what we did to mitigate the risk of accidentally impairing independence, and it's something that we talk about on every single engagement. How do we make sure that we're not stepping across that line and auditing our own work? We need to make sure that our clients are assuming full responsibility for this product.
Hugh, I don't know if it makes you feel any better, but if you go to page 16 or 17, that's where it basically clearly states that this is management's opinion.
Yeah, at that point. I guess I'm just thinking of people that can look this up and read it. You know,
well, you have to read it in total.
Yeah,
I mean, if you
yeah,
just
right,
jump
right.
into it and
yeah.
think, okay.
Yeah.
But again, this is part of the requirements of the GFOA to make the audit more, hopefully, helpful to the general reader, rather than just more of a bare bones on it.
Yeah.
So,
who writes these narratives? Is it you?
Yes.
And if you go to page 33. You get a look at the governmental funds balance sheet. So this shows all of the major funds. The general fund, local streets, ambulance, avoid thunder funds are deemed major. And then all the other governmental funds get aggregated into that last column. And so the general fund is the very first column. Here you can see that the three rows up from the bottom, they have $3,056,554 of unassigned fund balance. All the other funds are maintaining positive fund balances, which is certainly a healthy sign. And then if you look at the very last column, total governmental funds, two rows up, $4.937 million of total fund balance. And you kind of see how it gets allocated amongst all of the funds at April 30, 2022. If you go to page 35, we're going to look at the revenues and expenditures for your funds during that year. And again, general fund first column had a $1,089,581 increase in fund balance. And then basically, if you aggregate all the other funds together, local ambulance, Boeing, and the other governmental funds, pretty much break even. They have a small decrease if you net it all together of about $45,000. And then the very last column shows that your total fund balances increased by $1,045,370. Your beginning fund balances at the beginning of the year came in at $3,891,742, leading to your ending fund balance at year end of the $4,937,000. So this just shows how we arrived at your ending fund balance at April 30, 2022. And if you go down to page 39, this is the statement of cash flows. So we looked already at how the water and sewer funded financially, at least in the MD&A section. This is showing how much cash flow was generated from your water and sewer funds. And the very top row shows from your day-to-day operating activities in your water and sewer fund. Four rows down, first column, sewer fund generated $538,000 of operating cash. Water fund had about $460,000 aggregated between the two of them, about $997,000. And then the next section down just shows transfers in, transfers out. Basically, some money went from the water fund to the sewer fund, sewer fund to the water fund. And then the third section shows how much cash was used to finance your debt service payments, as well as any fixed asset additions during the course of the year. So altogether, in your sewer fund, $322,196 was consumed for long-term investment purchases or financing purchases, financing activities. And so $322,000 in your sewer fund was used. In your water fund, $293,000 was used. Altogether, $615,000 was used between those two funds. The next row down shows your net increase in cash and investments. So net of your debt service, fixed asset additions, and your operating activities, both funds had an increase in cash during the year. Sewer fund, $88,229. And your water fund had a positive $293,361. And the aggregate between those two was $381,590 of positive cash flow. Certainly a good sign, just nice to know that your water and sewer funds have rates that are leading to an increase in your cash reserves. At least they did during April 30, 2022.
Is this with the increase in the fee structure we approved? Or no? This would be
the year
before that.
Yeah.
So if you go to page 61, we get to the footnote section of the audit report. And I get this question a lot from my clients: how are we doing with regard to paying down our long-term debt? And that's what this schedule shows. How are you? Where do you stand on your long-term liabilities? So the general obligation bonds used for this building, at the beginning of the year, they had very top row, $5,895,000. $290,000 was paid off, leading to an ending balance of $5.6 million. Another $300,000 was scheduled to be paid down this fiscal year. And then if you look two rows further down from there, there was a new capital lease issuance in the ambulance fund. $134,448, leading to an ending balance of, and then $12,873 was paid down on that same lease during the year. Ending balance came in at $121,575, and about $26,000 is scheduled to be paid down on that lease during fiscal 23. And then business tax.
What is that lease?
That is for, remember we replaced the like the combined AED equipment that had the, what was it called, the physio reader or something like that? It's the portable units that they have in the ambulances that basically can send a signal to the hospital and have to what the patient's condition is. They hook them up with all the leads and stuff like that. I think we replaced the old Philips machines that we had that were going bad. We kept setting them out for replacement or repairs, and they just weren't reliable anymore.
Next section down shows that the water and sewer funds. Water fund had $220,000 outstanding, $110,000 paid down, cut it in half, and fiscal 23. Actually, you might have already made your final payment on that. $110,000. There was only one installment left in April 30, 2022. And then the next row down shows the sewer bonds, $2.41 million. $470,000 was paid down, leading to about $1.94 million, with another $475,000 in principal scheduled to be paid during fiscal 23. So getting close to the end on both of those. Basically about, well, in fiscal 26, that those sewer bonds will be paid off.
The water one was paid off, right, Mike?
I'm looking at up right now.
I think I make the payment in a few weeks.
I'd have to double check, Tim.
It's close. And then page 77, we get into the required supplementary information. This is where we see the changes in your net pension liability. So every year, the MERS contracts for the actuary evaluation to figure out what the city's total pension liability is. And that's what the top section is showing. In December 31st, 2021, the calendar year end, the city's total pension liability was $9,728,590. And if you look about four rows down from the top, you can see the change in assumptions was an increase in your total pension liability of $314,329, which was the third consecutive year of unfavorable changes in assumptions. They keep on increasing life expectancy or decreasing your long-term expected rate of return. Your long-term expected rate of return used to be 8%. They dropped it down to 7.6%. And then from 7.6%, it went down to 7.25%. So we've got those things working against us, and it keeps pulling up your total pension liability. And then if you go, excuse me, all the way back to 2015, you can see there was another change in assumption. So every change in assumption has been unfavorable to the city. Basically, about $1.2 million of unfavorable changes in assumptions. But for those changes in assumptions, you guys would actually be fully funded in on your net pension liability. If you look about halfway down the page, you can see you had a strong net investment income. It was an increase of $1,137,992. That was back-to-back years, or represented back-to-back years of north, just over 14% rate of return. The same was true in 2020, where you had positive $940,489. Even 2019 was in the 13% range, 13 to 14. So three consecutive years of very strong investment returns. It helped negate those unfavorable changes in assumptions. And then if you look three rows up from the bottom in that very first column, your total planned fiduciary net position as a percentage of the liability, 93%. And that compares to 87.91% in the previous year. And if you go all the way back to 2015, you can see that the city started 7 years ago at 64.38%. So very much trending in the right direction and close to being to the point where you are fully funded. See what happens this year. Probably see the numbers go backwards, at least for the 1 year, but still a remarkable progress has been made over 7 years.
And it's going to go backwards due to the market's position, essentially, right?
Yep, you can see the three consecutive years of very strong returns in 19, 20, and 21. I suspect in 2022 it's probably going to be a negative number. The very next page, page 78, shows how much the city has paid in over the past 7 years. Oh, I'm sorry, 10 years. And you can see 2013 started at $184,000, and merge just keeps on ramping that number up. It's worked its way all the way up to $485,961, that being the biggest reason. That plus the investment returns are the reason that you're seeing a decrease in your, or an increase in your funding percentage all the way up to 93%. And once you do get to that 100% funding, if you go back to page 77, the very top row, your service cost, that's a better representation of what your true recurring cost is going to be in the future if you get to that 100% funding level. So a dramatic decrease. And even that, the service cost, as the city has fewer active participants actively employed by the city, you can see that number keeps on coming down. Started at $106,360 in 2015, the very last column. And you can see it's pretty much been cut in half. So because you discontinued that, you can see that number is coming down sharply over time. Eventually it will approach and become zero. And then it's just a matter of keeping the city's funding percentage at 100%. So if the market does what it's supposed to do, then theoretically you won't have any more pension expense to pay for the MERS plan. The very next page, page 79. Shows your total OPEB liability. And just real quick here, this number is not really as large, but you can see in 2019, which was the first year that the city had to adopt the OPEB liability standards, $134,500, and that number has worked its way down to $86,500. Really the biggest reason is the state of Michigan, the uniform assumptions are, I guess, less burdensome on the local unit. So when Raymond puts together your annual actuarial evaluation, it's kind of dropping your overall OPEB liability. So that has been helping. You can see the change, three rows down from the bottom, 14,332,000, 12,000 in 2020, a decrease of $12,003 in 2021, and $20,406. And again, it's just the application of the new uniform assumptions published by Treasury on an annual basis are providing some relief to that total OPEB liability. And next, if you go all the way to page 95, unrestricted net position for this city for the past 10 years. I won't spend a whole lot of time talking about this, but you can see back in 2016, which was the first year that the city implemented the new pension reporting standards, it was the one and only year that the unrestricted net position went negative, $4.4 million, and that number just keeps trending up ever since then, all the way up to its current level of $7,871,252. A very healthy increase, and really the only reason that the city went negative in the first place was because of a new accounting standard that had to be implemented during 2016. Similarly, as I mentioned this earlier, if we go to page 97, this shows that the revenues and expenses of the city on the accrual basis of accounting for the past 10 years. And this shows that every year, going back to 2013, you've had positive increases in your net position. It's a very consistent and positive performance for 10 consecutive years. This is unique and definitely nice. It really shows how prudently the finances of the city have been managed for the past decade now. And not many of my clients can demonstrate this type of consistency in the results. Or I suppose they can demonstrate consistency, but normally it's not positive. So this is really kudos to the city for making this happen. Certainly it's not easy to achieve this, these types of results. Really, those are the highlights that I've got. And I know there was a question about the marina. We can take a quick look at the marina fund balances. If you go to page, I'm going to go backwards to get those. If you go to page 83. Earlier, when we looked at your fund balance sheet, the very last column was the aggregated non-major funds. This just expands those non-major funds and brings more clarity as to what makes them up. So major streets, fire, marina, airport, so on and so forth. Third column over is your marina fund. And the very top row represents your cash and investments in the marina fund at April 30, 2022, $407,742. And then if you look two rows up for the bottom, your total fund balance came in at $298,022. And it stands to reason, well, wait a second, if we have $407,000, why don't we have $407,000 approximately of fund balance? Because they should pretty much directly relate to each other. And the reason is, two-thirds of the way down or so, you see the unearned revenue, $125,616. And that represents the amount of funds that the city collected between probably December 1st and April 30, 2022 for the, I guess it'd be your fiscal 23 slip rentals. And so all of the advanced rental payments and lease payments that the city receives before the May 1st season starts gets recorded as a liability. Technically, the city has not earned it until May 1st. So for that reason, and all of those proceeds, while they're sitting in your bank account, and you certainly can spend them if you want to, they get backed off as an unearned revenue. And we recognize those as revenue basically on May 1st of 2022. May 1st, 2022, that full $125,616 becomes part of your fund balance. So it's really just kind of a timing issue because of the city's April 30 fiscal year end and May 1st marina year beginning. We have that one day hiccup with regard to the timing. So that's really the big difference between your cash and the marina fund versus fund balance.
Any other municipal government or any other client that has a public marina?
Most of them do. They have this issue.
They all have the same issue?
Yeah, depending on the timing. We have a lot of February 28 villages, 12, 31 counties, and March 31st. So anybody that has a fiscal year end basically before May, which is when most of our local units or most of the marinas start their operating season, they have this unearned revenue account or liability that gets reflected on their financial statements.
So Joe, could we take the 125,616 and add that to our December financial statement, 12/31/2022, which shows the revenues here, the seasonal at $13,715, and the other, the transit at $60,291, which would make it like $74,000. Could we add that to the 125?
I think we may have already done that. So Mike asked me that question. I worked with Jessica, and we reversed out that $125,616 and put it to revenue in the current fiscal year. So, and I'm not sure what version of the financial statements that you're looking at. There was a version that didn't have it in there, and I thought it made more sense for
this,
us.
This was just a dated 12/31/2022 that we get the monthly financial statement.
If it was printed on December 31st, then it's probably not reflective of the $125,000 yet, because I believe Jessica, you probably booked that entry late January.
I want to say it was in January.
It was printed on the 17th of January.
So it's close.
That still has an end date of December 31st, though.
Yeah.
Even if I create it in January,
yeah, right.
It's still.
I was just wondering.
What was the total revenue on that financial statement? If it's about $210,000, $220,000, we probably did reverse it.
Well, the user fee seasonal shows $13,715. The marina user fees, which I just assume are the transient, show $60,291.
You want to show them that sheet?
Yeah, yes. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, you've probably seen one or two.
There's
before.
An adult in the room.
Yes, that was before we ran. Before we reversed it out.
I was going to say, I was close to whenever the marina work session was.
Yeah.
When we were trying to figure out the balance.
So, that number does not include the $125,000. If we rerun that financial statement today, it will include it for fiscal 23, because we did reverse it out.
So what number should we all have? So we're all talking the same language the next time we have a conversation on the marina.
Joe, can you relate this to the information that you sent me with, remember we were trying to figure out so I could report to the commission as to what they had available in the marina fund to work with?
Sure.
And you sent me some emails back and forth, and I shared the last version of that email with the city commission.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anything would have fundamentally changed, and I don't have that with me right now to provide, or I don't know if anybody does to share with him.
I mean, I can pull it up on my thing.
The fund balance, I know there was an increase in fund balance during the course of fiscal 23 of about, I'm speculating, probably, I know there was an increase, so the total fund balance is more than $298,022 as a result of fiscal 23 operating activities. So the number has only increased since this audit report, and I think the question becomes, well, how much, and this is ultimately a decision that the city needs to make, is how much fund balance do we need in the marina fund? Just like you say, we want 25% of the general fund, you should have some type of a buffer in your marina fund. And on an average year, I think I looked at 2 or 3 years worth of expenditures, the marina fund averages about $100,000 per year of operating expenditures. So of that amount, how much do you want to make sure that you always have sitting in the marina fund balance?
What's the average?
Do you want to share that with me? Are we refreshing memory?
Is that the dollar amount right there highlighted?
Yes. Yep. So about $359,000 of cash was available at December 31st, 2022, after that adjustment. And if the marina wanted 1 year's worth of reserves sitting in fund balance, which would be $100,000, that would leave you with about $269,000 of surplus funds to invest in one-time expenditures. That's just one way, and it really just depends what your appetite is in terms of how much of reserve that you might not need as much of reserve in the marina fund as you do in the general fund, because you might realize, well, the marina fund, all of our funds are collected in advance, or the majority of our funds are collected before the season even starts, so we don't need as much fund balance in the marina fund as we do in the general fund. So maybe $100,000 is too much. Maybe you only need half that, or a quarter of that, or 10%. It really just depends on what the city's comfortable with. I think $100,000, I think if you have 1 year's worth of reserves of expenditures in your marina fund, it's extremely conservative. And that would leave you with $269,000 of cash or fund balance available to expend from that marina fund.
So the 100,000 you said is extremely conservative?
I would say so. That's an entire year's worth of reserves in your fund balance. That's my job as an accountant, is to always be extremely conservative.
I think one of the things we've struggled with too is just figuring out how much money the marina might have lost last year with it not being functioning at 100%. That number's been a bit hard to get a hold of.
We didn't have power, so we lost.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure.
Yeah. So it wasn't running as normal.
Sure.
So we're about to run this number down to zero.
That'll show in this audit that he'll be starting after we start our new fiscal year, but that doesn't help you right now.
And even the numbers that we're looking at right now should be somewhat reliable, but they haven't been audited yet, so we don't know what the exact number is going to be. And the year's not complete yet, so we've got a couple of things that make it somewhat speculative. But I do think that the marina fund was at a minimum showing an increase in fund balance. I could be wrong in saying that. I thought it did.
That's not what all the monthly reports would be.
Yeah, snapshots have been shown.
You're talking about in addition to the fund balance for the fiscal year that's reflected in this audit, or are you talking about for the current fiscal year?
Yeah.
He said this.
Do you have that email?
Yeah.
Let's take a look at that email. So. This is showing an increase in fund balance of about $60,000 during. But again, these are very preliminary numbers. So what we were looking at showed an increase in fund balance in the marina fund for fiscal 23 at 12/31/2022 of about $60,000. After we made that $125,000 adjustment to your unearned revenue. But again, the numbers aren't audited, and I can't render an opinion on that right now, but that was at least what the preliminary results were showing.
Were we thinking of 60,000 at a loss?
About a loss, yeah.
Yeah, that, I remember the 60,000.
Number sounds familiar.
Very familiar.
Well,
yeah.
And that was even, yeah, because we were at almost 30, and then we didn't have any of the salary in there, too. So that was going to take it even higher.
But a $60,000 loss, after we reverse the unearned revenue of $125,000, it stands to reason that we would have a $65,000 gain. So basically, your revenues were understated by this number because of the timing of the reversal. So after we reverse that number, it shows an increase in your fund balance of, coincidentally, about the same number, $60,000.
So do you believe your earlier email is still
accurate?
Yes.
Fairly in the
based
ballpark?
On the preliminary results, yeah. Because
we're making big decisions.
And I think even if we take a position that we're going to leave $100,000 reserve in there, it gives us some wiggle room in case the audit yields a different number. But
well, the other issue is just the loss of revenue and what impact that's going to have, which is, you know, part of our decision making. That number becomes very important. So if the marina is losing a lot of money, it puts...
Now, in fiscal 22, the marina had $218,000 of revenue and $100,000 of expenditures for an increase in fund balance of $118,000. So even if you have a loss of revenue, as long as it's less than $118,000, you would still have an increase, theoretically, in fund balance during the course of the year. So what I'm hearing is that revenues are less because electricity was out. So the question becomes, well, how much less was the revenue? Was it $50,000 less? Well, then we could still expect to see an increase in fund balance, because that still means that there'd be about $160,000-$170,000 of revenue. And if expenditures remain approximately the same, about $100,000, then we would still have an increase in fund balance during the course of the year. I guess it just depends on what that revenue loss was during the year.
I'm assuming we'd probably have about the same this year as we had last year, roughly.
Well, we had a budgeted number of $75,000 for seasonal, and the actual number is $13,715 as of the end of December.
But remember, that's on that whole skewed calendar aspect, too, though.
Yeah.
The bigger concern that I have still is that we weren't budgeting any salaries in there. So
yeah.
So the number is already skewed.
Okay. But if we take, this is confusing. Sure would be nice to have numbers that we all understood and, you know,
well,
could see.
How do we?
Yeah, how do we do
they're
that?
They're changing.
Yeah.
Because I remember the 60,000. And the problem is like, that's this year. That, I mean, and it's a conversation we had in front, in front of the public, essentially. And making decisions off of that. That's this year. We're not getting a new dock in May. So you start after budgeting, what is our lost revenue this year, next summer, until we get that new dock built. So 60 this year, 120 next year, how far do we go? Because you don't just say, we'll build a new dock and have it in May. Right now, we know we're not going to have one this next summer. So if we lost 60 last summer, we're going to expect we'll lose 60 this summer. But that's...
Maybe we did.
Yeah, now you're saying...
Right. The cash was there. It's really just a matter of taking this 125 and recognizing it as revenue.
What are you pointing at? Show me.
So it's on your balance sheet.
What page are you on?
Page 83.
Yep. The 125,616.
Yep. So that was revenue earned in fiscal 23 but collected in 2022. Okay. So we need to reverse that. Now, one other thing that we need to keep in mind is that the city is going to be collecting revenues for fiscal 24 this year. So it's tricky. And typically what we would do is we just reverse this at the end of the year and adjust it to actual. So we don't, because now we might end up in another ditch where okay, we reverse out the $125,616 in revenue, and now we're booking all the incoming advance rentals and leases for fiscal 24. We're booking that to revenue. Now it's going to look like, well, where did all this extra revenue come from? So we need to be mindful of that too.
But it's a rolling number. So technically, the 125,616, what is 22s, but then you go back to 21, and it's roughly the same number. Problem is here's where we get into the negative numbers, is that we're not putting those salaries in there. We haven't been putting those salaries in there. So if our expenditures, I'm not looking at that, but if they're $100,000, this is saying that it's, technically making $25,000. And if we have $30,000 to $60,000 in salaries that aren't in here, then that's where it becomes that negative number. So, and we also know that this year is going to be more of a negative one.
Well, but we haven't had the marina. I'm just thinking of numbers that are consistent. We haven't had that marina expense in there for the last 4 or 5 years.
No, I understand it. So that's what I'm saying. The 125,616 should be, if you had the same sheet there, that from a mirror one from the year before you, it should reflect virtually almost, the same thing. So that's what I'm saying. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean this number just going back
over time,
is going to be pretty much a similar number for the last few years, not 10 years, not what it, because you can see that, we can see that from the from the numbers that we got from, Tilly, Baker and Tilly.
Did you figure out, and
slip reservation DNR system, notating no electric on slip such and such?
This year there was a notice that went out before people could make reservations that we don't have power on DDoC.
Right.
Any of the slips that are associated with that.
Right.
Do we track to each individual slip?
Right.
I don't believe so.
Right. I was just, because I know at one point in time the conversation led to how do people know that are making those reservations on the DNR system right now that there is no electric out there?
Yes. We basically held off on making reservations until that could go out there. That did not happen last year.
Gotcha.
Barb tried to set that up with the state and somewhere it fell through. So we had people showing up here thinking that they were going to have power.
Right.
They didn't. They were not happy. We didn't want to go through that same process this year.
Right.
So Mark was working on that to make sure that that didn't happen again this year. And we were successful in that from everything I'm aware of.
Have the reservations been down at all?
Yeah, I would say so.
I'd have to check. I don't know off the top of my head.
Because that 125-616, if that is consistent year after year, we're hoping that's consistent this next year, even with the power outage that we have.
It might fluctuate $5,000 to $10,000 in a given year, but typically, yes, it's predictable.
So, in regards to Marty's question, we asked you this last year too, I believe. But should the marina position, the marina director salary, be included in that marina line item? It should be a line item under the marina.
Mm-hmm.
And so out of your 207 clients, handful amount have public marinas. Is that a standard practice?
Mm-hmm. And with BSNA, you can assign those types of categories and departments to them. So most of our clients do allocate it to that level.
Why is that not done here?
It was a trade-off that the commission determined with regards to benefits that the community received for the main boat launch and all those passes that we give out to people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's revenue that the marina does not collect. That's a benefit for the general population. So every resident that has a boat is eligible to get those free, and I forget what the price of those.
Yeah,
I was trying to remember what the amount of them is.
$35.
$35 for the season.
Got it.
So, and there's, and I can get you a number as to how many of those we give out per year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, okay, the logic that was used in the past was, okay, the marina is losing that revenue because the general fund isn't reimbursing that. So we're not charging the wages for it. That they saw that as a wash.
Well, you don't give out 10,000 of them.
No, heavens no.
Well, that's $35,000.
10,000?
Or 1,000.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd have to look and see how many we give out
every year.
Either
way, we don't give out either.
So that was the base, that was the rationale that, you know,
well, yeah,
we inherited.
Okay.
And previous, back way back in the day, we didn't even track the marina separately. It wasn't its own distinct set of accounts like you see now where you can see how it performs. And in addition to that, the city was, so it was just kind of lost in the big picture. And once we first started creating it as its own entity, in addition to not paying the wages, which we've never done, or tracked that separately, the city was making contributions to that fund of like 10 or, you know, some thousand dollars on top of that per year. And that's one of the things that Barb really improved is, you know, the financial situation of the marina. Again, whether we're charging all the costs, or, you know, that you want to charge to it or not, but we were able to track it separately. We were able to do away with the contribution from the general fund to operate the marina, just to keep it going, so it wasn't running a deficit every year, to more often than not, as Baker Tilly reports, that it was generally producing about, you know, 40,000 or some amount of surplus per year.
$36,788.
So let's throw this conversation out there then, because that's the past.
Yep.
You hired Dawn as the executive assistant. She obviously, whatever, when that hiring process, I don't I'm not here to point yeah. fingers or anything, but she wasn't in the capacity of the harbor master. So do you have the intention of hiring another executive assistant?
Yes.
With utilizing them as the executive assistant slash harbor master?
I don't know that until I actually have interviews with some of these people to see if they're qualified to do that or have the skills. Before Barb became the harbor master,
uh-huh.
I mean, the harbor master was always a secondary, has always been a secondary position
right.
to somebody else that had a full-time job here.
Right.
It usually was the planning director.
Right.
So Dan Reed, Tim O'Leary, other people like that, that's kind of what I inherited when I got here,
right.
was that. And generally they hated doing the harbor master and they really weren't into it. Barb actually liked doing it, so. And that's kind of why I turned it around.
So
but it's always been a secondary thing, and it's never been charged separately.
Right. Because, I mean, it would be, I'm going to be completely honest, putting those shoes on, being the executive assistant, planning director slash zoning director, do I want the burden of this during the summer, during Boyne Thunder, during 4th of July, when that's, I mean, the busiest time of the year
oh, sure.
for that. I mean, and in all honesty, slip increase from 44 slips to north of 80 or 90 is doubling the operation down there, regardless of what, like, some very bizarre comments I've heard in the past, how it will not increase operation levels at all. I completely disagree with that 100%. But at what point in time do we look at it as, I'm going to use some words of Tom's, of that truly being an asset of the city
mm-hmm.
and it being managed, in my opinion, correctly with a primary leader leading that operation.
Yeah. I mean, in some respects, it's very similar to what we've been doing with, what we're considering with regards to the EMS.
Uh-huh.
A lot of other communities have standalone harbor masters. I mean, Charlevoix does. And
right.
I'm not sure what they do in East Jordan.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's a person that basically, that's what they're hired to do.
Seasonally?
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah, and then the summer season is hot, and the rest of the year they, you know, do very, very little.
Right.
We have not gone down that path, but
right.
we might be at the point where that's something we have to do. And if we go down that path, I would expect the cost would go up even more than the $36,000 or whatever the number is.
Probably. I mean, you're going to start talking maybe
50 or 60,000, yeah.
yeah.
Or, well... Yeah, I mean, benefits is, I guess it all depends on how many hours. Of
right. If you're holding them seasonally, year
yeah,
round. Or
yeah, not. That'd be something we'd have to go over with the labor attorney.
Right.
So those changes, if we do want to go that direction, should happen in next month when we have our budget process.
Yes, and not be in the budgeting meeting, bring it up again, because that's all the notes I have from last budgeting meeting.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be, like, if I... For that to be managed correctly, I think it needs someone.
Mm-hmm.
That's their primary Monday through Friday.
Well, and that could very well be, but we're going to end up, we're going to end up paying for it more
right.
anyway,
yeah.
and especially in this labor market to try and find somebody.
Yeah.
And with all the controversy that we've had with regards to
right.
the arena, I mean, it's going to take a very special person to
want
to take that on.
Well, but for the most part, that's what you had. I mean, you didn't burden Barb in the summertime. That was her job. And the
yeah,
rest,
basically, we let go other
year,
things. Yes.
Exactly. The rest
yep.
of the year, she helped you in the other capacities and everything else.
Correct.
So, essentially, it was the same what we're talking about. That's why the argument, it still has to be in this number. I mean, to get a true number.
To get a true number, it does.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be, other than the commission determines that it is. It is, if we continue to go down that path, it will put additional burdens on the fund for the marina, which is going to give us less money to work with, obviously. So it makes that nut harder to crack.
Well, I got it, but it gives the truer picture.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
I mean, you can BS and shell game it all you want, you know. Not you, just, I mean, the numbers
yeah.
can be, you know, shell gamed all you want, you know. But to give you the true picture, that's...
Yep.
And it makes sense. Sounds like it's a best practice, right?
Yeah. Joe, the question I have, if you could help me out at least, is we've had four, if you could look back 3 or 4 years of what the marina did, and then this past summer we had the power go out. And what impact did that have on overall revenues for the year? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Sure.
Are we losing money? Should we be panicking about trying to make a decision, or do we have enough, you know, to get us through a rough patch so we make good long-term decisions? That's what I'm kind of trying to figure out.
Sure.
Because this number of losing and how much we've lost compared to what, you know, past 3 or 4 years is confusing to me.
Sure. I put together a five-year analysis on it.
Including up through 12/31/2022.
Yep.
That's a good one. Yeah, that'll help.
Mike's come up with a number. I've come up with, you know, just doodling around something different. So
sure.
That we can share the same information and completely understand.
Sure. Yep, I can do that.
So back up. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I don't know how long you're going to think it's going to take to create that. Is that something that we could meet and have a discussion with you, possibly even if you're not here in person, with a Zoom meeting or something like that, so the commission can have this paperwork in front of them and you can help talk us through it and we can ask whatever questions we might have or things of that nature?
Yeah, it will. I can have it ready. I mean, it's probably an hour of work, so we even want to have a Zoom meeting this week, that wouldn't be an issue.
Well, our next regular city commission meeting is going to be February 28th, and that might be the next time that we're talking about that stuff.
Sure.
You know, maybe we get...
I don't think we need a Zoom meeting if he's just going to put the numbers together and show us. You know, basically, yeah, just...
I'm just thinking it'd be good to have some ability for you to ask questions.
I'm fine. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to be hard. But what I was going to say is backing up. So then the other, you know, the other thing we talked about last meeting, and now we're going to be talking again about tonight, is, you know... The ambulance lost, you know, $27,000 last year. And here we are, you know, talking about completely, you know.
Well, that isn't on the agenda for tonight.
Tacking on, oh, you pulled it?
Yes, we pulled it.
Oh, okay.
That was in the draft one that went out to you. There, in the final one that went out, and it should have been noted in the notes that.
Yeah, it was. I didn't.
We pulled those from the preliminary one. There were two items that were removed. It was that one, because we... Brent.
No, it's okay.
So, yeah, we weren't able to get. We weren't comfortable with the final numbers, and we didn't want to go through what we went through last time.
Let me ask you this: has your position changed from that last meeting when I asked you how you financially? Like, you basically said that you were financially good. You support her decision on hiring for full time. Has that changed, or?
I'm going to reserve judgment on that until I see the final numbers. I don't want to dig my hole deeper if I'm in the wrong position, and if I'm wrong, I'll change my recommendation or what I said.
Because we did two, right?
Yes.
We made a decision to do two.
We did two, and Brenda was initially hoping to be able to bring the other two back today, and then we weren't far enough along with the information
and the numbers
that we were comfortable with to make sure everything's dotted and crossed.
Okay.
So that is not on the agenda for tonight.
In regards to the marina, Joe, like with the other units of government you deal with, how many of them have special millages for that? Like Charlevoix Township, Charlevoix has it, East Jordan has it. You know, we're really the only ones that do not have a millage for that type of thing. Is that the trend where local units of government are going to deal with all?
You know,
these rising costs?
Take a look and see how they're funded. I can't think of any off the top of my head. We probably have a dozen marinas.
Would be the ambulance.
Oh, ambulance.
Say marina, that's why.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was thinking Charlevoix funded.
I was confused.
Same. That's like Charlevoix Township.
Mark that on the calendar.
I thought that was new one. The marina millage. Ambulance millages. Yeah, most of them are subsidized to some extent with the village. In fact, I think virtually all of them that I'm aware of have some type of a village associated with it.
We take it directly out of the general fund.
Yeah, right.
And to be candid, I mean, one of the things, you know, as we're talking about this, I mean, the general fund, as you're seeing, is in very good shape right now.
Right.
I mean, it can absorb, and it has been able to absorb, you know, the offset for salaries for the marina. You're correct. It doesn't give a complete picture with regards to it, but it does. And we fund our ambulance, you know, and that varies from like 70 to 150,000 sometimes per year, our contribution, plus the other contributions in from the other jurisdictions that use our ambulance service. Mm-hmm. But you compare what we charge to offset the losses that our ambulance runs compared to what the revenues that they're generating by these millages, and it's factors like, I think Brenda was telling me it was like 10 times. I mean, if I was a taxpayer in the city of Boyne City, well, I am, in the city of Boyne City, in the city, because, you know, there had been talk about, you know, geez, we should set up an authority or something
right,
like that
right,
nature.
Right.
We are so much more fiscally responsible than any of those other agencies are in providing such a quality service at such a low price. Yeah, I mean, we have to make a contribution every year, but we're saving our taxpayers so much. Our taxpayers and all the other jurisdictions that get their EMS services from us, so much money. And I think I've had given this speech before. I'd have really be hard to, I don't see any advantage for the taxpayer to go to an authority other than it gets us off the general fund books. So, but we're clear as to where that contribution comes from. And ambulances, I won't say never, but almost never make money. They have to be subsidized. Governmental ambulances have to be subsidized someplace. Okay. What other questions we have for Joe?
That's all the questions I had. Well, for now, I think a lot more questions are going to come up through the budgeting.
Do you think we should keep upping the water and sewer rates with what you're seeing in the fund balance?
That probably is a little bit out of my league. You know, I'm good at looking backwards at numbers. I don't necessarily look forward at that. You're generating positive cash flows, which is a good sign. A lot of our local units don't. A lot of them just keep going backwards and wait until there's an issue. Then they figure out, well, what are we going to do to finance this project that needs to happen? So you guys are doing better than the vast majority of our clients with regard to your fees, at least from an auditor's perspective. Ultimately, you know, an engineer, I mean, there are firms that specialize in rate studies that will tell you, okay, your system is this old, you should plan on these types of improvements, and they're going to give you a far more informed cash flow analysis to help you determine where your rates need to be set.
So with our rate increase, because that was one of my questions, because we went through that budgeting process,
mm-hmm.
we talked about how great we were
mm-hmm.
financially with sewer and water.
Yep.
This $110,000 coming off with the water, sewer.
Yep, for the debt, right?
Yep,
correct.
The bond coming off. And then it was just shortly after that, it was like, hey, Mark's recommending us doing a rate increase. And I'm like, and I threw the question out there, and it was explained for futuristic infrastructural
correct.
Investment
yep.
down the road. But then, you know, with these grants that we have C2AE doing for us.
Going after this $12 million
yes.
type of thing to help offset.
Yes. It. Yep. So.
Of course, we don't have any of that yet.
Right. Exactly. So, at what, I guess, when you sit here and you're giving us a standard of, what was it, 2 months is the GFOA standard.
Well, that's for your general fund.
Right,
like
right.
For water and sewer.
Right, for our general fund, 2 months, GFOA, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So what standard do we have, or what, and like Tom said, the commission established a 25% standard. So where do we get that standard set?
General fund is different than the enterprise funds.
Right.
With regards to, we don't have a number that says how much cash is clearly in the water and sewer funds. We went through that analysis with Baker Tilly a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're the first ones that really gave us definitive numbers that said, yeah, we're in pretty good shape. We'd always thought we were,
right.
But they really went and clarified that for us. I think we're going to go through some significant changes for the next couple of years with getting a new water wastewater superintendent on there. Hopefully this person that we kind of made a initial, had the interviews with will work through, but we're going to be paying a lot more for that. Mm-hmm. We've seen it already with just John Holland being here with us. We're seeing a lot of things that, okay, probably need some upgrading with regards to it, maybe some deferred maintenance that we didn't know was deferred,
mm-hmm.
Stuff that's been waiting. And I want to get C2AE or somebody in here to basically do an overall analysis. The plant's about 20 years old now.
Right.
And it's going to need some more maintenance on that type of stuff. Now, some of that's included in that $12 million ask that we've got to the state.
Right.
But I think we need to find out, are we going to get that money? What's the new person's going to say as things that need to be done? And do we have another outside analysis, somebody, an engineer come through and say, okay, here's what you need to do.
That'd be another contract with Baker Tilly to do that analysis, wouldn't it?
I would think so. Once all the other pieces are put together.
What was that guy's name? He was excellent.
Andy Campbell.
Andy was very impressive.
Yeah, he's been promoted a couple times in that company since. So I'm not sure where we're going to come with a recommendation for this fiscal year coming forward. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got some, I'm kind of talking some of the negative stuff right now you brought out, and I would have brought out also with regards to we got some of these debts that are going off the books that are going to free us up.
Right.
But as you also mentioned, too, we've got a good chunk of this city that still doesn't have water or sewer.
Yeah.
And, okay.
So what is our end goal, I guess?
That's ultimately a commission determination. I mean, if we weren't going to do any expansion and just say, you know, if somebody wants to get water and sewer that doesn't have it now, they're going to have to do a special assessment or wait for a developer to come in and put in the infrastructure like they did up at Fox Run. That's one position. That's almost the position we've taken.
It is.
But if we want to get more aggressive to it, then we could start eating down some of those fund balances pretty quick.
And that would help developers and future builds.
Correct.
To change the subject a bit, Joe, once a month we get a 48-page of this, and that's our financial picture. Review of what's going on. If you were to look at this, what should we be looking at?
Can I ask a question a little differently?
Sure.
Joe, what have you seen out there as a report that's given to some of your other communities that helps keep the commission or the council up to date as to what our financial situation is? They don't like the report that we have now. It's kind of overwhelming and...
I mean, it's got a lot of stuff.
They were looking for, the general consensus I heard is they were looking for something better and more informative rather than what we're doing now.
Snapshot.
Is there a good example out there of somebody else we should copy or look to?
Well, in BSNA, I think you could run that same budget to actual report, but summarize it by department as opposed to having all the details showing supplies and treasurer's wages and utilities broken up by all the different, you get so many different line items in there, I can see where it's a little bit overwhelming. You're trying to make, if you want a dashboard, 48 pages, it's going to take some time to decipher. You've got some analysis, paralysis that can happen. But I do think BSNA can give you that same information, but it just kind of compresses everything. So instead of showing you, all right, here are the 18 line items that are the administrative department,
here's the bottom line.
Here's the administrative department. Here's the budgeted. The original budget, the final budget, and the actual, here's your variance. And it's not going to be on one page, but maybe we get it down to 5 pages instead of 48.
Once that's set up, would it be easier for Jessica?
It's already there, is what I think you're saying.
Once you make that change, and I think there's just a box to check, it saves that. It'll get saved that way.
My assumption, let me borrow this if I can. This is a standard report from BSNA,
yes.
our accounting software. And I think what you're saying is there's another standard report that we could call up and ask for that doesn't provide quite this level of detail, but gives you the areas. And if you see an area that's out of whack, then somebody can say, hey, what's going on here? Let's dig deeper without getting lost in all this.
Let's try it.
So
I think it's vitally important to look at your budget to actual every month. I have many clients who don't look at it at all, which shocks me. But yeah, I don't think there's any way of escaping the importance of reviewing the budget to actual, but I think we probably can get that a little bit more summarized.
Do you know of another community that has one that like is a real good one?
They love, yeah.
Let me do some checking, and I'll get with you tomorrow on that. Yes, we will find something.
Yeah, even if it isn't canned in BSNA already, if there's something out there that...
we can mimic.
Yes, exactly. Learn from.
We just went to BSNA over there.
That was one of the biggest moves, best moves that we
you
made.
You like it?
Love it. It is the gold standard, to borrow somebody's phrase, in the state of Michigan. I don't know what you see out there in the county software.
It's no question. I feel like we're salesmen almost for BSNA, because we have communities that use QuickBooks, and it's just a mess. We are constantly referring clients to go to BSNA.
And we had some other software when I first got here, and Cindy was a little leery about making the change, but once you made the change, you ask her sometime, just, you know, you see her out walking the dog.
Yeah.
How was it before BSNA? Oh, she'll tell you.
Well, I'm sure she will.
But I think she'd also admit, too, I mean, and I'm sure they're probably going through an Ace Jordan, that change is hard. It takes a little while to get used to, and, you know, just change in general is hard.
Yeah, I had to learn. I had to go to a couple different classes and figure it out.
Yeah.
When it came time to input in my budget,
And that's
Heather, can you come help me?
And that's something we're working towards as well, too, because right now, BSNA is off here, and our budget book is over here, and it's, like, duplicative. And Jessica's working to help move us toward using BSNA's budgeting process, taking that next step.
Sure.
Now, hopefully, it'll be a transition for us, but over time, it should simplify things. Did I summarize that right? Or close?
Yeah.
All right. Are we ready to it?
Can we any other questions or anything for Joe?
Oh. Joe was, I thought Mike told me that Joe was ordering pizza as a guy.
No.
I thought I heard that too.
Never believe anything I tell you.
not the budget.
I like client, they expected me to bring donuts. I brought donuts like 2 or 3 years in a row. 1 year I didn't bring the donuts, and there was a mutiny. I had to leave and go buy donuts and drive them back.
Well, I certainly appreciate all you do, Joe. It's been really helpful. So.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn our special
work session.
Work session.
The budget review work session.
Is there a second?
Second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, thank you.
Sure. Glad to be here.
And if anybody thinks of any other questions, get them to